What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Caleb Callahan Show. Today, we're going to dive into one of our first debates. I'm a huge debate guy. I think debates make you a lot smarter. The reason is because no matter what side of the aisle you fall on, you'll have someone challenging your point of view. And that's always important. Never find yourself in an echo chamber. Right? Never find yourself in an echo chamber. You ought to be willing and ready to have your worldview challenged at all times. And the reason you should be is because your desire should be the truth. But we're going to have to jump straight into it because we're never going to get done with this. We're going to start off with opening statements. This is the debate between John Lennox and Richard Dawkins, the God Delusion debate. It is a great debate, and there's a lot to talk about, and we are going to learn a lot. So get your drink, get your coffee, get your food, get whatever you want to get, and let's dive in.
Exchanges should be about 5 minutes per side. And then what is not reflected in your program is that each of our debaters will finish the program with final statements, with concluding remarks. We will start that with Dr. Lennox, and then we will return to Professor Dawkins. So, Professor Dawkins, tonight you will have both the first and the last word, I suppose, in the interest of Christian charity. Professor Dawkins, could you begin our discussion with an autobiographical statement? Tell us something about yourself and about the book.
I was born in Africa. I'm a child of what was in those days the British Empire. Descended from a long line of khaki shorts-wearing, hairy-kneed, brown-shoed colonial officers. I had every opportunity to become a naturalist because Africa, as you know, is a wonderful place to be a naturalist. Unfortunately, that's not the way it was. I never was much of a naturalist, much to my father's disappointment, I suppose.
At some point in this debate, he will say that you are a Christian because you were born in a Christian community or born in a Christian country or something. It's just a go-to with atheists. I'm sure he does it all the time, so I'm sure he will do it. What's interesting to me is he just said, I was born in Southern Africa. It's a lovely place to be a naturalist. My father was a naturalist, and what do you know? He ends up being a naturalist.
He was a very good, is a very good naturalist. I suppose that's a preamble to saying that my interest in the science of biology, which is what I specialize in, came more from an interest in fundamental questions than from a love of watching birds or insects or pressing flowers. I wanted to know why we're all here. What is the meaning of life? Why does the universe exist? Why does life exist? That's what drew me to science.
So that's super interesting because none of those are scientific questions, right? Science does not answer those questions, right? Science is something that is observable. It's measurable, right? It's direct testing, right? So these fall outside of the realm of science, and it's more philosophical, it's historical. And so it kind of tells me exactly what I do see in Richard Dawkins, that from the very beginning, he was already deciding that science was going to answer every question in life for him, even though it shouldn't, right? Even though it's not supposed to. But that's how he acts today, which makes sense because that's how he got started, it sounds like. So I had those same questions. I just went to philosophy. I went to religion. I went to history. I went to the things that actually answer those questions. Right, so anyway.
My parents left Africa when I was about 8, and I came with them. I was sent to boarding school in England. I suppose part of the point of this autobiographical note is to give a kind of religious background, since we are talking about religion tonight. I had a harmless Anglican upbringing. I could never claim that I had religion thrust down my throat in the way it might have been had I been brought up in a more militant faith.
The Anglican Church accepts evolution. That's why he's saying that.
Anglicanism, as you know, is a very civilized version of Christianity.
It's civilized because it accepts what he believes now.
No bells and smells and no creationist lunacy. I was confirmed into the Church of England, and at the time I sincerely believed it. I had a brief period of doubt at the age of about 9 before, about 3 years before my confirmation. This doubt was caused by the realization that there are lots of different religions in the world, and I recognized that it was an accident of my birth that I happened to have been born into the Christian faith, and I recognized instantly that had I been born in, say, Afghanistan or born in India, I would have believed very different things. And that quite rightly shook my faith in the particular religion that I'd been brought up in. Weirdly, and I now don't understand why, I seem to have lost those doubts when I was about 13.
So again, I knew he was going to say that. They always do. You're born into that, therefore that's why you believe it to be true. Why is it also not that he was born in South Africa? He said a great place to be a naturalist. He was born with a father that was a naturalist, right? So why are those things not equally reasonable to assume that that's why he's a naturalist, right? You see how they're not intellectually honest across the board. Now, I'm not going to tell you that what you're born in does not have an effect on you. It absolutely does. God says, raise a child up in the way that he will go, and if he departs from the faith, he shall return. And what God's saying is, give a child truth. When they go to non-truth, they'll have some contrast to bring clarity to what is true. That's why that's important.
And I was confirmed into the Church of England. I went to Oxford after having lost my faith for good at the age of about 15 or 16. That was because I discovered Darwinism. I recognized that there was no good reason to believe in any kind of supernatural creator. And my final vestige, last vestige of religious faith disappeared.
So he's being, when someone's being overconfident, right, when they're being kind of hyperbolic in that way, that immediately just makes me go, no good reason to believe in God? Like, none. He even has a book called something Gene, the Selfish Gene. And I think he talks about in that book that one of the things is one of the best arguments for God is design. Like, it all looks designed, right? And so to say there's no good reason is just, it's ridiculous.
When I finally understood the Darwinian explanation for life, I went to Oxford. I got a doctorate at Oxford eventually. I went to the University of California at Berkeley as a very young assistant professor, teaching in those days animal behavior. I then went back to Oxford after about 2 years at Berkeley and continued my career as a student of animal behavior.
So he was Oxford, California, Berkeley, back to Oxford. He was not in an echo chamber at all, right? He was really amongst the people of different worldviews and really challenging himself. I'm kidding.
About 1972, there was a general strike in Britain, and there was no electric power. I couldn't do my research, and so I thought I would write a book. And I started to write a book, which eventually became my first book, The Selfish Gene. However, unfortunately, the electric power came on again.
Here's the book.
So I shelved the first two chapters of the book that I'd already written, put them in a drawer, and forgot about them, until about 3 years later in 1975, when I got a sabbatical leave and resumed writing The Selfish Gene. Since then, I've written about 8 more books, Extended Phenotype, The Blind Watchmaker, A River Out of Eden, Climbing Mount Improbable, Unweaving the Rainbow, A Devil's Chaplain, The Ancestor's Tale.
It might have been in The Watchmaker he actually talked about that. So I've read The God Delusion, The Watchmaker, and The Selfish Gene.
And most recently, The God Delusion, which is the subject of tonight's debate. I regard it as an enormous privilege to be alive, and I regard it as a privilege to be alive, especially at the end of the 20th century, beginning of the 21st century, a privilege to be a scientist, and therefore to be in a position to understand something of the mystery of existence, why we exist. I think that religious explanations, although they may have been satisfying for many centuries, are now superseded and outdated. I think, moreover, that they're petty and parochial, and that the understanding that we can get from science of all those deep questions that religion once aspired to explain are now better, more grandly, more in a more beautiful and elegant fashion explained by science.
Again, science is observable, it's measurable, it's direct testing, it falls outside of the realm of science. The answers to these questions fall outside the realm of that. I'm going to show you how he takes science into areas that he shouldn't, and it will expose him, right? Most of his science is pseudoscience. Most of it is fairy telling, right? He's telling you this grand narrative, this grand story. And I'm going to show you in this debate, it's a grand story that he wants you to believe in the same way that I'm going to show you the Bible, right? All right, let's go to Lennox. Opening statements.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here. Each one of us has a biography and a worldview, our set of answers to the big questions that life throws at us.
Origin, meaning, morality, destiny, right? We talk about that on this channel.
And so a little about my biography. I'm married to Sally. We have 3 children and 4 grandchildren. I work now at the University of Oxford as a mathematician and as a philosopher of science. I was born in the middle of the last century in a country with a tragic reputation for sectarian violence, Northern Ireland. My parents were Christian, but they were not sectarian. In the book, The God Delusion, Richard, you say that religion teaches us that it is a virtue to be satisfied with not understanding. Well, whatever other religion this may apply to, it certainly did not apply to the Christianity my parents taught me from the Bible.
So what he's saying there is sectarian is not willing to consider other people's worldviews. Richard is sectarian for sure.
Encouraged me to be intellectually inquisitive because they were like that themselves.
And if you held the truth, if you believe that you truly held the truth, you wouldn't encourage your children to do that, right? You wouldn't. You would encourage them to look into other things.
Not in spite of their Christian faith, but because of it. And I owe them an immense debt for setting me free to read everything from Marx and Russell to C.S. Lewis. And developed in those days an interest in the big questions of life. I was very fortunate to get the chance to leave Ireland and go to Cambridge, where I could indulge my passion for mathematics and for science in general. And Cambridge not only gave me the opportunity to develop those intellectual pursuits, but it gave me the opportunity to meet many people of other worldviews who did not share my background and my convictions. As a result, I developed a considerable interest in atheism, an interest which led me subsequently as an Alexander von Humboldt Fellow to study in Germany and then travel very frequently to Eastern Europe during the period of the Cold War. After the fall of communism, I went very often to the academies of science and universities in Russia to discuss and reason about these things and to see it firsthand the effect of systematic exposure to atheist indoctrination over the preceding 70 years.
What you're going to see in most of these debates when a well-informed Christian comes in contact with a supposedly well-informed atheist, typically the Christian is extremely well-informed in atheism, and the atheist has no idea what the Christian story is. They've read just enough of the Bible to be able to show what they don't like about it, but they've never taken the time to actually consider the narrative and the God of the Bible, right? They've never, ever done that. And you're going to see that all throughout this debate. I'm sure Richard Dawkins is going to show himself that he has no idea what the Christian position actually is.
Yes. And so I, too, am very privileged to live at this time and to be involved in the public discussion of these issues. Now, reading Richard's book, I found absolutely fascinating because it strikes me as an impassioned crusade to warn his fellow human beings of the slavery, the oppression, and the mental and possibly physical tortures imposed on them by religion. And I actually feel a lot of sympathy for you on this particular point, because I myself am totally opposed to any religion that seeks to impose itself by force or that takes advantage of or abuses people in any way. You cannot impose truth by force.
And amen.
Both of us, I think, hold that religion should be debated in a rational way as anything else. I share his passion for truth. Neither of us, mercifully, is opposed.
Sometimes I love John Lennox, but sometimes he's overly, generous to the other person. I do not believe that Richard Dawkins has a passion for truth, and I would not say at all that I share his passion for truth. He does not have a passion for truth. So this is him being overly charitable, overly generous. I would not do that. I'm not going to tell somebody that they're passionate about the truth when he obviously showcases himself to not care about the truth. And you know that because he's not willing to understand anything that he doesn't understand Christianity. He's never looked into it.
Postmodern relativist. But as a passionate atheist, Richard is committed to the idea that God is a delusion. For him, ultimate reality, I take it, consists of the impersonal matter and energy of the universe. I believe the exact opposite. God, far from being a delusion, is real. Ultimate reality is a personal, eternal, and supernatural God who has revealed himself in the universe, in his word, the Bible, and supremely in Jesus Christ, his Son, who is Lord and God incarnate. I'm very aware that this puts me, according to Richard's book, firmly in the category of those who sit fluttering among the dovecotes of the deluded, sucking my religious dummy, or pacifier as you call it in Alabama.
Like I said, they're not going to be charitable, right? And I'm not saying we shouldn't be charitable. I'm all about being generous and charitable and gracious and all that. But not to the point that I say something that's not true.
You suggest that religion builds a firewall in the mind against scientific truth. Well, that might be tragically the case with some religions, but it's not so with biblical Christianity. Indeed, the reason, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm passionate about truth is that God is the God of all truth.
Amen.
One of the most famous statements that Jesus ever made was, I am the truth. An astonishing assertion that, as C.S. Lewis pointed out long ago, is either megalomaniac, pathologically mistaken, or valid, since he is claiming not merely to say true things, although that is so, but claiming to be ultimate truth itself.
That's the trilemma. C.S. Lewis said, Jesus says, I am, either Jesus is a lunatic, he was the liar, like the greatest liar ever, or he is Lord, right? And nobody's ready to say that Jesus was a lunatic because he's so sound mind in so many situations. Nobody's ready to say he's a liar because he had such integrity. And so therefore, he must be Lord. But what you can't chalk him up to be is a good man, right? He was either Lord, a liar, or a lunatic. Now, there's a fourth L that people bring into the debate now because that was such a strong argument. So now the secularists, the atheists that are very combative towards Christianity, they've tried to drag in this fourth L called legend, right? It was a legend. Jesus didn't really claim to be God, right? And you see Alex O'Connor and that crowd try to press into this a little bit. And that's mainly a textual criticism question. And we'll look at that. The idea of legend is, again, ridiculous. But that's their new smuggle, right? That's their new challenge for now. And once the Christian faith showcases it as defeated, they'll try to find something else.
The ultimate truth behind everything from the Andromeda Nebula to human life, conscience, and mind. Please note that what divides us is not science. We're both committed to it. What divides us is our worldviews, his atheistic, mine theistic.
Yes, what divides them is not science, but pseudoscience and science, right? John Lennox is going to treat science as science, and Richard Dawkins is going to treat science as the end-all, be-all to all worldview questions and answers.
And Christian. Now, his book presents to us a grim world. It is a no-holds-barred attempt to deliver people from the dragon of religion. so that they can lead a life of uninhibited self-fulfillment, unencumbered with the background threat of an imaginary god. And he says it looks bleak and cold, especially from the security blanket of religious ignorance. But, ladies and gentlemen, we need to take it seriously. If that's the way it is, then that's the way it is, and we need to face it. But we need to discuss it seriously and look at the evidence. Neither of us wishes to base his life on a delusion. But which is the delusion? Atheism or Christianity? That is for each of us to decide on the basis of the evidence, of course.
Good stuff. That was really good stuff. I like both those opening statements. A lot we can learn from that. So in the next video, we'll get into their back and forth argument.